Wasn't planning on starting out feeling weepy. So I'm going to just warn you right now that I'm going to rabbit trail because I have so very much to say about this topic. And I've rewritten this I don't even know how many times because every time I write it, I think, oh, this will work. And then something else happens and I think of something else that I feel like I need to say. And so buckle in. So I'm Sadra Danicus, for anybody who does not know, my family's over here. Today I am here to talk to you about National Orphan Day or Orphan Sunday. And this is a day of observance and awareness for the plight of orphans and displaced children throughout the world. And it is my belief that the church is ultimately not only capable of changing this national crisis, but is also responsible. And I know that's a pretty bold statement to make, so I'm going to say it again so I'm not misunderstood. I believe that it is the church's responsibility to deal with a foster care crisis in America. And that is a radical declaration, so I'm going to give you some reasons behind why I believe that and hopefully give you some biblical backing to support what I have to say. I was going to start this by giving you it ends up being a fairly long story of why I feel like I'm remotely qualified to talk about this. But really, that's me talking a whole lot about me. And I don't want this to be about me. I want this to be about God and about what Jesus has to say. So I'll give you just a brief, the Cliff Notes version, I guess. In 2012, my daughter, who was up here singing, she's Pastor Kai. At the time, she was in a youth group, and that youth group had a couple kids that went, they wanted to go on a mission trip to Guatemala. And at the time, I was not real comfortable with sending my daughter to a foreign country without a parent. So I decided I would go because my husband, bless him, is not a big fan of, let's just say he'd never been camping really until he met me. It's not his thing. And so I went ahead and went with that group. And at the time, I will admit wholeheartedly that I did not feel like it was my mission trip. This was my daughter's mission trip that I was supporting her on. And so I went, and by the time I came back, it was my mission trip as well. While we were in Guatemala, one of the first stops we made was to an orphanage. And there were kids of all different ages there. We learned that in that country, being an orphan was actually a privilege, if you can imagine that. Most of the homeless children living in that country end up in labor camps, where they are worked tirelessly for virtually no compensation. At an orphanage, at least they had a shot at an education and having a chance at bettering their lives. Despite the weight of all of those circumstances, the kids seemed really happy. Do they have pictures? Yeah. We spent a great day there. We spent one whole day, and it was amazing. Played soccer. The Guatemalan kids kicked our booties in soccer, like way better than we were. We left that orphanage, and then the area that we went to next, it was extremely poor. And when I say that, it's really hard to put into words because I feel like in America, we have a vision of poverty, and this is a poverty like you can't imagine. It's inconceivable. I remember it being super hard to even process what that looked like. One of the villages that we were in, the week prior, we learned that an infant had just died of malnutrition. You know, this wasn't an infant that died from disease or from, you know, a birth defect. It died because its mother was so malnourished that the nourishment she was providing for it was not enough. That's tragic. I remember looking at these people, and you saw some of the pictures. I was struck by, why are they not more unhappy? Like, these kids were smiling. People were smiling. And they were very, very small because of the amount of malnutrition. Throughout, Guatemalan people are small, they're short. Like, I towered above a lot of the men, and I'm not a terribly tall person. And I just kept thinking, why aren't they more upset? How can they be laughing and smiling despite this poverty? I remember coming back from that trip and immediately wanting to go back. I still would like to go back, but at the time my husband kept saying, why do you need to travel across the continent or around the world to go on a mission trip when there are people right here in our backyard who could learn about Jesus? And I remember it being super annoyed by that simple question. I felt like he hadn't been there. How could he possibly know? Like, only the cool kids understand what this is like. And that line of thinking ended up being the catalyst to a whole giant list of ways that God was going to rock our world. In 2014, I learned about a group called Safe Families for Children. The pastor of this church at the time had a family member that was involved and introduced this idea. And it just so happened that at that same time, our women's Bible study was doing a study on the book of James. And James is pretty blunt and to the point about the church's role in orphan care. And I'm going to get back to that. I have more to say about that. But those two things combined. So we signed up to take some classes and we learned a whole bunch more about Safe Families for Children. And here's the problem with learning new things is that once you've learned them, you cannot unlearn them. That was the first time in my life that my eyes were opened to the homelessness struggle that's happening right here in Spokane. I can tell you that I will never be able to drive through a parking lot without understanding the setup of large parking lots. I learned that a lot of the homeless live in their vehicles in those parking lots, and that a great many of them have children, and those children are attempting to go to school every day, living every part of their lives from a car. So we did Safe Families for Children, and our first foray into that was a sibling group of four, because we're crazy like that and just jumped in with both feet. They were ages 4 through 12. It was the hardest thing I'd ever done. It was terrifying and amazing all at the same time. Some people in the church today helped us with that. The Paulsons showed up at our house at 11 o'clock at night when they learned that one of the kiddos that we had was wearing a pair of shoes that was about three sizes too big. So they rushed out, bought a pair of shoes. She must be downstairs. Susan and Brandon went shopping. There she is. So we had a great deal of help from our church family, which also, again, that theme of family. So all during that time that we were doing Safe Families for Children, I continued to feel God nudging me. I knew that I needed to do more, but I kept telling myself, now isn't the time. But here's the thing about ignoring nudges from God. He is going to get your attention. If he feels like you're supposed to be doing something, he'll just keep nudging. And so at a Super Bowl party on February 7th in 2016, I took a nasty fall while playing two-hand touch football with a bunch of families during halftime, and I broke my elbow, tore up my hand. I hurt myself. This is a theme, just so you're all aware. Keeping up with children causes me injuries. That's my shirt today. My kids are my cardio. So during that long recovery, and it was a long one because once I healed on this side, I ended up having to go in for shoulder surgery on this side. And so I was in and out of slings for a total of about 10 weeks. So that was a long time. And during that time, it's when I finally kind of came to the conclusion that I needed to just take a step in faith and do what God was nudging me to do. And I signed up for the foster care classes, did the orientation, and did all of the class requirements and started working on getting our home licensed for foster care. To date, we have had 14 kids stay with us anywhere between two nights to 503 and counting. In a little over 4 years. Does that number sound crazy to you, that we've had 14 kids stay with us? Like, blows my mind a little bit when I think about that. So looking back now, I can see that God was giving me signs and guiding me to learn all these lessons with my heart that we were going to need and prepare me for what we're doing now. Seeing those orphans and the supremely poor people in Guatemala, learning about homelessness in my own backyard, learning about the homeless children trying to go to school, learning about the principles of biblical hospitality through Safe Families for Children, learning about the support of a church family and how they step in, and finding time to be obedient to God and to my husband were all things that were preparing me for what is to come. So why do I believe that orphan care and adoption is an issue that's not only for those called to do foster care or to adopt, but why do I think it's relevant to every single person? As followers of Christ, we believe that Jesus is the Son of God. We're publicly stating that we believe that we should be trying to live a life that is Christ-like. We believe that the Bible contains the guide in which we follow to try to live that life. This also means that we understand that the day sin entered the world, every person on this planet became an orphan. You are an orphan. But the day you accepted Christ as your Savior, you also became adopted. We are now all adopted into a new family known as the church. We are all heirs to an eternal inheritance. And just like an adoptive family, as we integrate and we learn about our new family, we slowly become more and more like them. We become more and more like Jesus as we walk with him. When I think about like how you become more like your family, I'm sure that every one of your families has things that like it's your family's custom or your family's thing. And just as much as I think we impart some of that on the kids that stay with us, they do the same for us. We have like isms now. So for example, we don't call them backpacks. They're called pack packs in our house because of a little boy that stayed with us. He was 4. And you know, that was 4 years ago. And to this day, we still call it a pack pack. We giggle and laugh every time we eat spaghetti. One of the things that we do when a child comes to stay with us is I'll ask him things like, what are your favorite foods or what are things you don't like to eat? Just so I can get a feel for what I can do to help them feel more at home. And one of our kiddos, I said, well, what are foods you don't like to eat? And he said, oh, I hate pasta. I don't like pasta at all. And I said, okay. And I said, well, give me an example. What's one of your favorite foods? And he said, spaghetti. So now every time we eat spaghetti, we kind of have to laugh at that. So adoption itself is an example of the family of God. The Bible is actually a book about adoption. There are stories like that of Moses, Esther, Jesus himself. So again, I ask, why is it relevant to every single Christian, and why do I think it's our responsibility to take over the adoption and foster care crisis in America? The answer has a few parts, but one of those is James 1, 22 and verse 27. 22 says, don't just listen to God's word. You must do what it says. Otherwise, you're just fooling yourselves. And 27 tells us that pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. So we're supposed to be caring for orphans and widows. It's actually a commandment. Now we're going to look at John 13, 34 through 35. So now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. That's the NLT version, and the NIV version says, by this, everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. Jesus is telling us that our love for each other should be so decisive, so evident, so visible, so apparent. It should be so plain, so clear, so outward. It should be so understood that everyone will know, that it will be unmistakable and straightforward that we're his disciples because of our love for each other. Remember when I said that we were all orphans? Well, Ephesians 1:5 says, He predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ according to the purpose of his will. We have all been predestined as heirs and sons and daughters to the kingdom of Christ. We are to love one another as Jesus loved us. We're to care for orphans and widows because we ourselves were adopted. And that's why I believe it should be the mission of the church to take a stand against the sins that lead to lost children. What if foster care and adoption was not considered an unusual thing? What if foster care and adoption was just a normal, everyday occurrence? What if we were able to create a safe place where those who are caring for orphans and the orphans alike felt like they were at home, comfortable, and safe? The most current published statistics state that right now in Washington State alone, there are 10,655 children living apart from their biological family in in-home care. One of those children lives with me today. On September 30th, 2016, the statistics state that there were, I always have to like stop and read this number because it just blows my mind, 437,465 children in the national foster care system. What are the things that land these kids in the system? Physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, drug and alcohol addiction are all things that can lead the state to remove a child from a home. My personal experience is that the last two often can go hand in hand. An addict who may normally have been an amazing parent can end up being a slave to their addiction and end up not properly caring for their kids. Drug addiction can also lead to drug-addicted babies, which that number is mind-blowing and increasing rapidly due to the opioid crisis that we're experiencing right now. There are any number of reasons why these children end up in the system, but here's the most important part. Not one of those reasons is their fault. They suffer the consequences of decisions that they don't even have a part in making. Isaiah 1:17 says, "Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow." Unfortunately, those consequences can have lifelong effects. And it's my belief that the Bible has a guide in how we can minimize those effects and help children to grow up better. Matthew 25:31-40 tells us, "The king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" Motherless, fatherless, homeless children are the least of these. This number can change periodically, but on average, a little over half of the kids who end up in the foster care system are going to be reunited with their biological families. Initially, my gut says this isn't good. Why are they giving kids back to families who've proven that they're not able to care for children? What I've come to realize is that the answer to that question is not so simple. I believe the church has the answers to a great deal of these issues as well. Ultimately, research has shown us time and time again that biological family relationships are important and even vital to most children. So why would I tell you that foster care is important to do if reunification is ultimately the goal and that getting children back with biological family is what we're doing? Because attachment is proven to be beneficial and necessary. Again, the guidance and examples that the Bible lays out are a baseline, just like God knew that fellowship, guidance, and love are necessary for spiritual growth of an individual. It turns out that those same connections are vital in the physical and emotional growth of a child as well. Studies in brain development and on attachment have led us to understand how important kids learning how to attach and how to form bonds with an adult are to their basic brain development. When that process gets interrupted or doesn't happen, pathways in the brain don't form. We've even learned that at certain developmental stages, if those bonds aren't formed, there's a risk that they never will. Foster care becomes important because during a time when a biological parent is unavailable, children still need someone to bond and attach to. Remember, we're supposed to love each other just as Jesus loved us. Our love for one another for one another will prove that we're his disciples. So we need to step in and fill in to love these children when they're needing it most. We need to try to prove or to provide love and mentorship that bio families need to get their kids back. It isn't enough for us to care just for the kids. We're also called to care for families. Towards the end, I'm going to talk a little bit about what that looks like as well from a biblical standpoint. I can't tell you how many times a person who finds out that I'm a foster parent will say something along the lines of, "I could never do that. I'd fall in love with the kids and I'd never be able to give them back." So my first reaction to that, and this is in my head, I don't say it out loud, but it's kind of snarky. In my head, my gut goes, well, I don't love children that much, so it's not hard for me to give them back. Or in my head, I think, well, I'm just a robot with no feelings. So I know that people don't actually mean it the way that that comes across. What I'm hearing is actually their fear of pain. And it's a totally valid and realistic thing to feel. I can assure you of that. If over half the kids in the foster care system are going to end up going back to a bio relative, the chances are that you are going to have your heart broken if you choose to be a foster parent. I can't promise you won't end up with a broken heart. In fact, I can almost assure you that you will end up with one. But I can also promise you that in your moments of weakness, he is strong. He can fully handle every part of our fears if we can trust in God's true strength. The Bible is a guide for how to navigate those fears about the hurt as well. Psalms 34:18 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." If any of you have ever participated in our Wednesday night Bible study, you've seen me crushed in spirit. Absolutely crushed. 2 Corinthians 1:3 through 5 says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ." And Philippians 2, 3 through 4 tells us, "Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Look each of you not only to his own interests, but to the interests of others." God tells us that loving others will not always be easy. Even having biological children comes with a risk. As parents, we are simply the stewards of the children God blesses us with. We're the lifeline and connection that they have as they grow. As a biological child or parent of a child diagnosed with cancer, we don't say, "Look, this is about to get ugly and it might hurt me, so I'm just going to step out until it's all over." No, a biological parent chooses and wants to be there, holding the hand of their sick child and comforting them. Ask the parent of a child who has died if they would rather have never had those moments with their kid. And I don't know of a single parent who would say, "It hurts so much now that I regret ever having had that baby." Those parents count every single moment as precious. They hold on to every single memory and they cherish it. And that is what God wants us to do for orphans as well. He wants us to risk it all and go all in. He wants us to love and form attachments. He wants us to take a risk that it might hurt. He also promises us to be there holding our hands the whole time. He promises us that even when we don't know what we're doing, he does. Trusting in an unknown outcome or having faith is never easy. However, taking a leap of faith is often rewarded. God tells us that those who are poor in spirit and who mourn are blessed. We need to focus on the eternal blessings that we can share and that we stand to gain, and not of the temporary hurt that we can feel. Remember that we're adults. When you choose not to foster, you're telling a child that their hurt is less important than your own. When I was reading that to Grayson, he was like, "Mom, that's pretty hardcore." But it is ultimately a truth. I know not every single person is called to foster, but we're all called to help in some way. And again, when we're saying that this pain is scary, what we're saying is that our fear of pain for ourselves is more important than our fear of pain for what these kids are going through. So today, what I would like to do is leave you with some ideas on what you can do starting right now and things you can look into doing in the future. How can you help? Of course, number one on my list is going to be become a foster or adoptive or safe families for children home. We went into foster care saying we absolutely, under no circumstances, would adopt, that our family was complete and intact. The end, we're just in it for helping the kids. And foster care has made us reevaluate that statement. We're now kind of writing the line on adoption. And that's a significant thing for me to say because, like I said, we really had no intention of adopting. We thought we would do foster care for as long as God led us to do that. And now all of a sudden we're faced with this decision, this choice. So becoming a foster or adoptive home. Right now in Washington, there are children sleeping in hotel rooms alone every night because we have a shortage of foster homes. What that looks like is social workers pick up children from schools or their homes or sometimes off the street. They sit in a room downtown with an adult, sometimes just in a room, and wait while a group called Home Finders starts making phone calls to people like me, to foster families, trying to find placements. Those kids can sit in an office for hours, and this can be at any time of the day or night. And if they cannot find a bed for the kids to sleep in, then they get a hotel room. And there's usually more than one child involved, so they'll have numerous rooms in a block, and then a responsible adult person sits in the hallway and makes sure that these kids don't run all over the place in the hotels. And that's happening nightly in Washington State alone. Just think about if you were a child and you get picked up from school and don't even get to say goodbye to your family or siblings, and then you're sitting in an office full of strangers, and then you get to stay the night in a hotel room alone. That just literally breaks my heart. You can become a respite care home. Maybe the idea of having a child or children live with you for weeks, months, or years at a time is just too much, but you could still have kids on occasion. Respite care is desperately needed. Now, in case you don't know what respite care is, it means you go through all of the same licensing requirements as a foster care home, but what you do is a little bit more structured. So, for example, if Darren and I wanted to take an anniversary vacation, the kids that are in our home would need somewhere to stay. So kids that are already in established foster homes would go and stay with you for a pre-designated amount of time. What's really cool about respite care is that once you become a foster parent or a respite care provider, there's this really amazing community of foster parents, and you get to know each other. And it's really comforting to know that a child that you have been loving for a period of time in your home is staying with friends, with people that you actually know and that possibly already know your child. The Vanderpools have actually done respite care for us, and our little buddy that lives with us had no clue that he was in respite care. He didn't know that he wasn't able to go on a trip with us and therefore had to stay in another home. All he knew is he got to spend the night at his friend Kyler's house. Like, for him, it was just an amazing thing. So respite care is so very needed because sometimes foster parents need a break. So having respite care in your home is really important. You can support foster and adoptive families. That could mean setting up a meal calendar, lawn care, babysitting. If you're uncomfortable with babysitting alone, you could offer to play with the kids in a foster home so that the parents can get chores done or sneak in a nap. You could host a date night, stock supplies, host a support group, pick up the groceries, help with transportation. Transportation is also something that's super needed right now. I do transportation to 3 separate therapies per week for the kiddo that's staying with us. I have to drive him downtown and back for 2 of his appointments, and 1 is out here in the valley. If I get sick, I just have to cancel. He doesn't get to go. That is a way that people can help. If you can't actually foster, you could offer to be a driver. And trust me, my kiddo is far from the only one that has numerous appointments during the week. There's lots of foster families who are dealing with that. You can support bio families who are struggling to work on their program goals to get their kids back. You can offer to drive them to a class or an appointment, help them get items or supplies they need to stock up on, or attend classes with them. Now that one's a little challenging. It's been challenging for me at times because we're taught to treat or to think of bio families as the enemy. They're the ones that have screwed up, and so they're the ones that are supposed to pay for harm done to these children. But the thing about biological families is quite often they were once the foster kids staying in someone else's home. They've never had the opportunity to learn how to parent. No one's ever taught them. And so when I say supporting bio families, be that teacher. A lot of times bio families have no clue how to budget or balance a budget. We've run into several times where the bio families don't have vehicles. And that's a significant thing. Like, take a minute and think about, from where your home is, where's the closest bus stop? Like, do you even know where the closest bus stop to your home is? So from where I live, it's about 1 mile away. And if I had to grocery shop from the bus for my family, that would be an oofty. I mean, that would be really, really difficult for me to carry the groceries back from the grocery store and take public transportation and then haul all that back to my home. That's what bio families are dealing with. So offering to go help them, sitting through their parenting classes with them. You know, a lot of times they'll sit and feel like they've been doing an adequate job. They don't understand why they're here. And just sitting with a person and taking the class with them shows them that, you know what, you're willing to step in as well. You can mentor or tutor foster youth. The current statistics tell us that 1 out of every 5 foster kids who age out of the system are going to end up homeless. This is a never-ending cycle, guys. Like, it's a tragic, tragic cycle. Foster kids are usually behind in school due to the chaotic nature of their lives. This is another one that it's emotional to talk about. One of the kiddos that stayed with us spent a lot of time tutoring him through school. As a 5th grader, he was reading at about a 1st grade level. And the majority of his behavior issues at school had directly to do with his inability to read. He was embarrassed. He's not a bad kid. He was an embarrassed kid. He didn't want to have to sit through tests that he couldn't read to take. You know, he was labeled as a behavior issue child because he couldn't read. That's sad and frustrating. So because of the instability in the homes of foster kiddos, they're usually behind in school. And you don't have to be a teacher. I'm not a teacher. You don't have to be a teacher to sit with a kiddo and read at 1st grade level. You don't have to be a teacher to review multiplication and division tables. This doesn't take special qualifications. Positive male role models are often lacking. You can become a big brother or just take a foster child under your wing. If you have a specialty, like if you know how to work on cars, or if you're good with woodworking, if you coach sports, there's any number of things that positive male role models could do with and for these kids. You can start a foster care ministry in your church. You could become a CASA. A CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. They follow the kids in a single case and advocate for their needs and rights. I have had kiddos staying with me where the CASA was like my best friend. They're on speed dial. I call constantly because they're the ones, not the social workers. A social worker is ultimately a representative for the family as a whole. A CASA is for the kids. They're literally there for the children. So becoming a CASA means that you would have access to getting these kids into different programs and things that they can benefit from. And last, you can pray. Pray for the overflowing court system. Pray for the drug and alcohol addicted. You can pray for social workers with overflowing caseloads. Just this week, I had the privilege of getting to go down to DCYF and give an award to my social worker and talk to and thank all of the social workers in the Spokane area on behalf of foster parents for what they do. Social workers are another area that I feel like I could probably talk for days about. When I say overflowing caseloads, my social worker alone has 22 more cases than she's supposed to average. 22. And that's 22 cases. That's not 22 kids. Some of those cases involve 2, 3, and 4 children. So, I mean, if that just kind of puts into perspective how hard those people work. You can pray for counselors, teachers, therapists, and mentors. You can pray for grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins who've stepped into a parental role. Foster care is not just strangers taking care of children. Foster care is also kinship care. When you step in and take on the child of a family member who is struggling. Make sure that every day you're praying for those who are on the front lines and for those who are suffering within the foster care system. Ultimately, you're either called to bring children into your home or you're tasked with helping in some other way. For those of you who are doing the small group Bible study, we're doing a study on a book called Letters to the Church by Francis Chan. And I find it ironic that this week's lesson that we all learned was on following God's commandments. I thought that paired rather well with today. We're commanded to take care of orphans. Everyone can do something. Kids in crisis situations can't wait until it's convenient for us to help them. We have to step up and help them when they're in need. We can't let the fear of our own potential hurt deter us when we consider the consequences of what it means for a child to never know love. Kids in foster care are not the state's kids. Kids in foster care are God's kids. And it is the church's responsibility to care for them. Mike, do you want to come up and end us in prayer? Oh, and one last thing. In your bulletin, I listed a whole bunch of different ways that you can help. So the Teen and Kid Closet, it's a really unique program. It is set up so that when foster children need to get clothing, they get to shop for free. Our church has actually played a big role in helping keep this going, and it's really unique, and it's a cool thing. We often get kids that come to us with nothing. Like, they show up wearing the clothes that they have, and if you can imagine, it's quite the financial burden to provide an entire wardrobe for a child like that. And so the Teen Kid Closet lets us go shopping for free. We get to get the kids PJs and socks and underwear and clothes for several days. And it's all done 100% on a volunteer basis. So if you have children, as they outgrow their clothing and it's in good condition, if you could donate, that's a huge help. It's a huge, huge help. They're always in need of financial assistance because it is 100% volunteer run. And they also can use help when kids come in to shop. So if you have time a couple times a month, you could be one of the people who's there when kids get to shop. And it's actually really fun to be there. Embrace Washington. does all kinds of work in the foster and adoption community. They throw this big event called the Santa Breakfast that my family has gone to twice now and we're signed up to do this year. And they provide all kinds of gifts and pictures with Santa Claus and raffle baskets and all kinds of fun things for foster families and foster kids. Spokane Angels is actually brand new. It started with Austin Angels, and Spokane Angels is still getting on its feet. That's why there's not a number, but there is a website, and I encourage you to visit it. Have tissues ready. Have your Kleenex box next to you if you watch the videos. Sally's House. Last year, our Owens Fund contributed to gifts that went to Sally's House. Sally's House is kind of, I guess you'd call it like a halfway home. It's where some of the overflow kids get to stay in a big home altogether. It's not a permanent option for children. It's supposed to just be an in-between, and often kids will end up living there for months at a time. And then Fostering Washington is another one that it's just a group that supports foster families. So those are all ways you can help today and in the future.